Hey, listeners, are you getting inspired to dive deeper into your learning of EFFT? If so, head on over to Catherine's website to check out her list of upcoming trainings. Some trainings are focused on combining EFFT with young kids and EFFT play therapy. So head on over to her website and we hope to see you in the future. Check it out at katherinedebruin.com, katherinedebruin.com, and we hope to see you in the future.
Welcome to the Family Express podcast, where our destination is resilient and connected families. Come aboard with your hosts, marriage and family therapists, Katherine DeBruin and Rhonda Evans, to explore the world of emotionally focused family therapy, a model developed by Sue Johnson and colleagues. Together with our guest speakers, our travels will map the EFFT landscape, highlighting lessons learned, shared fears, and the passion and curiosity that bonds our community.
Welcome back, listeners, to the podcast of the Family Express with Katherine DeBruin and Rhonda Evans. We have a very special treat for you all. I know, broken record, I say it every week. We have a very cool, interesting topic that I think is newer in the therapeutic world. So we're very excited to be showcasing it and bringing it to you directly to your heart and your ears. Our guest today is Riley Fairgreave. Is that correct? Did I say it right?
You nailed it.
Okay, awesome. Riley Fairgreave. Riley is located in Idaho, and he is an LPC and an NCC. And very interesting work that you get to do. Even the room you get to do it in, Riley, is very interesting looking. So we would love to hear about who you are, what kind of work that you do, and please describe the room that you're in so our listeners can visualize it along with us.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to. Well, my name is Riley. I primarily, let's see, I think I should start with the room because I'm like looking at the room and seeing where I should describe. So the room I'm currently in, this is our adventuring room, our therapeutically applied tabletop role-playing game room that I use for my play therapy groups. There's a large table in the center on the far wall. There's definitely some sconces with some fires glowing. They're play fires, I promise. Just really cool LEDs. Different miniatures around the room. There's a dragon looking at me from the corner. Different ships and battleships and settings and scenes. On the wall I'm sitting against is some stone and wooden pillars that my partner very graciously helped me create out of foam and lots of paint. And just, I guess if you can imagine sort of a like an ancient medieval castle with just a little bit of warmth, not too cold. That's where I'm sitting right now. And the work I do, I work with kiddos and couples, primarily helping folks find just different ways of being and exploring the world. And with my work with this therapeutically applied tabletop gaming room, that's a lot of the emphasis here is how do we take on and embody different roles, different characters, different parts of ourselves that are absolutely parts of us that we can explore and role play through in ways that are not only encouraged, but celebrated in a space that lets us just try on new things. I hope that answers your question. I kind of went off there, but.
No, I think that's so great. So we can imagine you sitting in your room. I'm looking at it and you're saying it's made of foam, but I got to tell you, it looks like real stone behind you.
Oh, thank you.
It looks very real.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Just insulation foam. Yeah.
Rhonda, I can only imagine how excited you are because I happen to know something about Rhonda, which she loves medieval dinners, right?
Doesn't it love medieval times, Riley? It's one of my favorite things.
Yes, no, absolutely.
The banquet right there, all dressed up.
Sure.
Riley, do you dress up when you're in that room as a clinician? Oh.
Yes, great question. I have with some groups. It definitely depends on, so one of the resources I utilize kind of talks through therapeutic distance in the sense of, you know, it, kind of if you can imagine a storm at sea, if you're in the middle of the storm, you're just trying to survive and get through it. If you're on the shore, oh, that's a cool scene out there. I hope everyone's okay. But if you're on the water between the shore and the ship and you can feel the rocking of the waves, that's a pretty safe distance, but still enough to feel it, kind of that window of tolerance sort of deal. So for teens and adults, families that maybe need to get a little closer to the role play, it might be a little harder for them to envision or to enter into that fantasy space, that imaginative space, for whatever reason. We do use dress up because that could bring us a little closer. If I'm working with littler kids where they're already in it, the dress up might take them too far into the story, and they might not, it might be hard for me to pull them out because they might actually really think they are a wizard that can tell me to be silent and never speak again. Yeah, it depends. But yes, I have, absolutely.
So Riley, as you work with children and families, and you have this incredible room that sort of transports people into another world, and then even the potential for dress up or for certainly utilizing role play. Why is this even important? Why not just have kids and a family come and sit on a therapeutic couch and talk about things? Like, why the need for all this?
Oh my goodness. You hit the nail on the head. There's so many places to go with that. I think the thing that comes up for me most immediately is being able to have lived experiential experiences that help folks move through challenges or encounters in a way that's not just talked about, but felt and experienced is so helpful for healing and growth. And in terms of the work I do with kiddos outside of this room and in my other playroom, my more traditional playroom, you know, there's a process and experiential aspect to the play that is moving through these challenges or bringing these things to the forefront so that I can work through them. I can communicate with you through the lens of play. And so taking that principle in here into this tabletop room, sure, we can talk about the challenges that we're having and we can goal set and plan, and that's all important and good. But it lands in the system in such a different way when I can talk about my goal being someone who is valuable, someone who is important, someone who is loved, someone that can figure problems out, versus getting to play a character who has a team of people who love you, who care about you, who support you, who want to go on this adventure with you so that you're not alone. And you are able to overcome these challenges. And in terms of the, you know, the boundary between fantasy and role play and imagination and felt lived experience, that line's pretty thin in the brain. So if I get to imagine and feel what it's like to be a hero, the brain and the nervous system takes that in. It's hard to capture the magic in words of what I get to see in this room, both therapeutically and also figuratively with folks casting spells and talking to dragons, you know. I hope that answers that question.
Yes, absolutely. Because I'm trying to think even now, Riley, like the role of magical thinking in a child's life, the role of experiential learning and role play can be such a beneficial way in families to draw children in to even learning skills, having new conversations, where it engages the child and just makes it more fun and accessible without it being so threatening. Like, I'm trying to think of the families I've worked with where maybe a child is oppositional, they're just resistant to going to therapy, or a child who just has a lot of shame and it's just so uncomfortable to come in and have the conversation that's needed. Are these some of the kinds of kids that you might be drawing into more of this gameplay? And then even as I say the word gameplay, I think of how much a part of children's lives video gaming is, right? And gaming is. So this really meets them where they are, I suppose.
Yes, absolutely. A couple of thoughts there with the video gaming. Video gaming, or a lot of early RPG video games, came from tabletop role-playing games. The difference being is that when you have a video game, the code dictates what possible options you can do in your story. So whatever's programmed into the story, that's the options you get. Versus, like, there are six people sitting in a room collectively and collaborating on a story. The options for where that can go for the kiddo are endless, because it's based on all of our collective thinking and responses. So it gets to be more adaptable and approachable to the kiddo's needs in that moment. And it gives them much more of a sense of agency. Like, it really is responsive to them and to the group at large. In terms of kiddos that get drawn into these types of groups, yes, the oppositional kiddos that really are done, don't want to do traditional therapy. There's lots of stories in the tabletop RPG, therapeutically applied tabletop RPG. That's a long, so I was just going to say TA.
So hard to very long. Say, Riley.
Yes, and the coffee's not kicked in yet. The TATTRPG space, even that's a little long, but therapeutic gaming, of a lot of these groups that are being done with like veterans or other groups where the group setting, the access to therapy is frequent and often, and to a point where they kind of know what to expect. And it's not always the most enjoyable experience. But what happens when I get to go to a gaming group that has all the same goals of my other therapy group, but I get to play? Like, I get to role play out a character. I get to be back in camaraderie with people again. I get to experience this as a character and experience it in the room. There's so much more I can talk about that. But to return to the kiddos, oppositional kiddos, absolutely. Anxious kiddos that need a different, I get to put on a character who is still me. I say characters are windows into parts of ourself. And so that character, that confident, caring, sure character is still in you. And you get to bring that out and play that in a place that's safe and tells your nervous system you can engage in that way, even if I'm really anxious about entering into therapy. So there's a little bit of that therapeutic distance. Anxious kiddos, oppositional kiddos. I work a lot with neurodivergent kiddos as well. Like the social skills, being able to work collaboratively with other group members, even just the patience required in combat to wait for your turn to do something, very challenging, but rewarding, but challenging. So I don't mean to oversell it. It's just so adaptable. I found it to be helpful with lots of different kiddos and presentations, because it can adapt to them and their needs.
That's awesome. That's amazing. I can hear your passion for what you offer and what you do.
I'm a huge nerd. It's hard to hide. I've been playing D&D for 12 years, running groups as a DM, not therapeutically, for 7 years, and then doing these therapeutic groups for the last four years. So I love it.
So can I geek out with you and maybe show my
weakness
of how this is all very, very new to me.
Yeah.
Can you help me understand what might be different between tabletop group in a recreational setting versus a therapeutic use of it? Particularly when we were talking earlier, you were talking about building a character. And for someone who doesn't play these games, like, is that unique to a therapeutic use of it, or is that common to both settings?
Yes, a fantastic question. The difference primarily, I would say, between a home game group and a therapeutic group is mostly reliant on the fact that there is a trained therapist in the room running the game. In Dr. Megan Connell, I believe I'm saying her name correctly, she writes a wonderful book on, it's called Tabletop Role-Playing Therapy, A Guide for the Clinician Game Master. And it's one of the few resources out there. But she talks through this sense of frame theory and how a game, a tabletop game, operates in certain frames. So there's the frame of the players physically in the room, the frame of the game rules, the game mechanics, the characters themselves, which is another frame. And at home games, those three frames are all that really exist. In a therapeutic game, we add a fourth frame, which is that of therapeutic intention, intervention, and theory. So I have found in anecdotally and also with other folks that talk about playing tabletop games, who have great intention in the characters that they build, who create characters that align with them very dearly and deeply, playing in a home game with a DM that's not necessarily therapeutically trained, but who is still safe and responsive, experiencing growth and change and self-discovery. I've talked to a lot of folks that through COVID, through the isolation that happened through COVID, you know, they found home gaming groups that gave them so much connection and comfort and help and really benefited therapeutically. But not every home gaming group is like that. And not every home gaming group has those intentions at heart. And not every home therapy or home group can really create that environment for folks. So in the therapeutic space, ensuring that the environment is safe, ensuring that there are boundaries, that there's safety, that there's limits in place, that this is a space where the intention to come here is to explore, to work, to engage in a fun way, but also to really explore parts of ourselves, as well as do so in community where you're with other folks doing that together, mm-hmm. as well as the training of the therapist, the therapeutic game master, being able to integrate goals into story beats, knowing that if a character engages in an action that they don't really like, or maybe didn't end up the way that it should, kind of assessing and knowing, is it going to be more helpful for growth to have that character move on with the story and try to integrate that difficulty? Or because it's the story that we control, do we hit rewind and try again, try it a different way or try it an alternative way, reset the scene in a way, right? Like do some classic role playing. And so having that intention that we're not just getting together to, you know, my home gaming group, drink some Mountain Dew, eat some M&Ms, eat some Doritos, like tell a good story, roll some dice, which is still fun and helpful for me. And that can be present in a therapeutic group. But also, our intention in being here is really like diving in to you and to the story and this work. So the line is thinner, I'd say, but it is still present. There is a difference, and a very clear difference.
Riley, you have just triggered me, my friend, and you're making me think right now about playing board games at our table in our family and how it's always meant to be this amazing time, but then inevitably people start fighting. Oh my God. Yes. I talk about the ability of a board game or any kind of game, right, to really bring out dynamics in a family. And then you're right, like the beauty of you being there in that game room is you can help on the very dynamics that come alive in the moment. Because like in our family, between the three kids, then kids start fighting with each other and squabbling over, and then one who's a little neurodiverse can't focus and suddenly wants to end the game halfway, and then the others get mad, and then as parents you're like, this was meant to be a night bonding time. So yeah, I hear what you're saying about, like, at home all this stuff comes alive, but we don't necessarily know how to utilize it in a therapeutic way. And you are inviting families in, or groups of children or groups of siblings, but to play this live game together in the coolest room ever. And then as, like, what do you do? What do you, yeah, I guess you said, like, the dynamics come alive and then you jump in there and hit a rewind.
Listeners, check out our book for children of any age. It's called A Jumble of Thoughts and a Tangle of Feelings. It's on Amazon.com. If you know a child out there who is having a tough time but unable to put that distress into words, this book is your guide to helping them figure out what is going on. Whether you're an educator, a therapist, or a parent, we really think this will be a helpful guide for you.
Blind, or do you just, like, sort of jump in and suggest, like, let's fix it this way, or you could do that, or how active are you, I suppose? What is it like in the game, in the moment, you know?
Yes, fantastic question. Also, yeah, board games are tough. I have a vendetta against Monopoly. I will never play Monopoly. I can't do it. To your point, too, like, imagine as well, not only the game creates some conflict, but what if all your kids, like your kiddo, was the race car who had his own history, backstory, dynamics, and his own intention for how the game should be played. And now the other kids, kiddos, they are their characters who have their own intentions and plans. So, like, dynamics, but also intention can be in conflict too. In terms of what it looks like or what actively we're doing, and it will depend differently based on who your therapeutic game master is and their training and their the way that they use this modality. Back to kind of that frame theory, Dr. Connell talks about you can do intervention in any one of those frames, trusting that they will bleed out to the others. So if I teach a skill to the players in frame one, I can create encounters in frame three with the characters to help coach that skill. I can also, if I'm wanting kiddos to, like, maybe a kiddo that asks a lot of clarifying questions, but not necessarily in a way that they need the information, more it's kind of like feeling a little anxious, just checking in, I might intervene in frame two with game mechanics and give them a sword that gets stronger the less they ask questions and the more they believe in themselves and take action.
What?
So
what?
You're
blowing our mind. Hang on.
Okay, let's go again.
Or, you know, I could just intervene straight in frame three, and I apologize, numbers, I might be reversing them in terms of what's frame three and frame one, regardless, there's three frames. But if I intervene at the character level, and, you know, maybe siblings are really struggling to talk to each other, really struggling to communicate and often fight, what happens if in the story they're moving through a dungeon and there's a rock collapse behind them? The only way to get through this ancient dungeon is to talk to the two statues on either side of the door, but they're siblings and they refuse to talk to each other. So now it's less about these siblings and having them talk to each other and more about, you got to progress. This is what's in your way. Can you help these statues who are siblings learn to talk and collaborate with each other? And then I'm not really even talking about these siblings, but they will take that with them. And so, kind of to go back to your question, if conflict happens in the room, it depends on what the conflict is. If the conflict is between characters, and they and the players can have therapeutic distance where they know, I'm not actually fighting with Tommy across the table, but Grognar the Barbarian is really upset with Riz the Rogue, right? And I can even role play out what it's like to be angry in a safe way where Tommy isn't going to be upset with me, but our characters can be mad at each other. Then that's you know, I might let that play out, versus if players are in conflict, then you can also use frames to put the conflict back into the character frame. Mm-hmm. And you can use pronouns and like storytelling beats to say, like, hey, it sounds like Riz and Ragnar are really upset with each other. I'm curious, Riley and Tommy, how you might help them figure out what's going on, or how might you help them if they were, you know, arguing with each other, to figure this out, right? And you almost can create some of that therapeutic distance. If it's a full stop game breaking, like we call it, or Dr. Connell and myself, we call it like frame confusion, where the frames have just blended so much that you know, is the character mad? Is the player mad? What's happening? That's kind of a full blow up moment. Then that's also where it's helpful to have a trained clinician in the room that can walk those things back, help regulate and separate, and get back into the game. Because I've played in home games when I was in high school and middle school, where that happened. No shame on the DM, but we were all middle schoolers trying to help each other play a game. And that group just kind of died, you know? So
because the DM wasn't able to manage those moments of blending of frame.
Yes. And I talk about this sometimes when I help train folks to do this work. I didn't know about frame confusion yet, but I did have experiences where I thought my friend was so mad at me for thinking that we need to do this challenge in this way. Like, he had his way of doing it, I had my way of doing it. And in the role play, when we're talking through our characters, we're in opposition to each other, because it's not just a, you know, I think it should be done this way or this way, but for the characters, it's life or death. Like, you know, do we go left or do we go right? And so our characters are going to argue about that. I didn't know that it was just the characters, or I didn't have the space to think it was just the characters. So, you know, my friend, why are you so mad at me? And we talked through it after the session when I was, you know, just in high school, like, hey, man, hope we're okay. And he's like, nah, dude, like, you're good. I just think your character's dumb, you know? And that was like a light switch moment of, oh my gosh, like, we can role play out these tough situations and feelings and emotions through even some separation too. And it's not a reflection on me. So I was about to go off on another tangent. I'm going to drink my coffee and stop. I love it so much. So.
All right. Well, where should we go next, Catherine? What do you think?
Well, I mean, just that example you gave, Riley, so helpful about the distance it creates and this role play atmosphere where you can actually try on different things, try on different feelings that you're not accustomed to. You know, so often in life we have to experiment before we figure out who we are, what feels good. And this is a really unique way to do that. And I'm thinking about like families with young kids and even teenagers, often how when you've got them in a therapeutic room, how role playing really is fun. It's fun because, yeah, kids are getting bullied. And you know what? If you're an anxious kiddo getting bullied, you need to develop assertiveness. Mm-hmm. But how do you find that voice? I mean, you don't have the voice, right? You can't just like start having an assertive voice. But when you, especially with families, when you have the parents involved and you have them maybe act out the kid, and then you have the kid who's being bullied take on a different role, and you can just play it in so many ways. Well, often that kid just wants to sit back and watch. And then when they see the parent role play something and the therapist gets silly, then suddenly it's not about the topic of interest. It's about this game. And yes. Then suddenly they forget, they feel a bit more comfortable, and then they're acting out and doing all these different kinds of roles. I just think it's a really fantastic thing for families to do, right? It's just a really fun way to play together. But as you're saying, it can be incredibly therapeutic. And we can certainly encourage families to try this stuff at home. But for families that are out there with more serious dilemmas and kids who might feel terribly stigmatized about going to therapy, I bet we could talk any of them into going into this amazing room that you have, because who would not be fascinated by... It's sort of like when I'm looking at your room, it's like walking into one of those escape rooms. That's what it looks like inside. I mean, it's a fully immersive experience, you know? And we've got adventure. There's an hour. We have to accomplish this. It's really fun. You're just all sort of thrown into it together.
Well, that's very kind of you. Yeah, I love the room. And to your point, too, there's... I can't name drop them right now because I don't remember the name, but there's plenty of videos on YouTube. I think there's one family that kind of does tabletop role-playing games, and they've put out some videos just of them and their kids playing together.
It's
so fun. You can, and again, as far as I know, not therapeutically trained, but
yeah,
to watch these little kiddos really stress over the details of which route down the dungeon do I go? Like, this is pretty scary. And mm-hmm. to have their parent be the GM who helps guide them through. And the GM knows that, you know, the consequences aren't that dire, but I'm not necessarily going to tell you that. It's mm-hmm. helpful to feel the impact of your choice. Mm-hmm. But to watch these little kiddos go from the first session of like, I don't know, to then like a few sessions later in the video, it's like, I throw a fireball at the spider and like, I jump off the wall and all those confidence just from trying.
Yes. Creativity, confidence, problem solving, yes. Negotiation.
Oh, yes.
And so wait, so you're saying go to YouTube and put in tabletop role-playing family, something like that?
Yeah, I think so. I'm trying to remember how I found it. If anything, you can also find a lot of like gaming groups that put out stuff. I will say, because it's more of a show, you might see less of those sort of growth elements. But there are some videos online where I'll be sure I actually get the resource to you. But there's one video I can think of where it's a group of six players and the DM. And not therapeutically trained, but he's a brilliant DM, very famous DM. And the group is three parents with their kids. And it's such an interesting video to watch of like parents playing with their kids, but in a group setting.
Interesting. Yeah, I'd love to send up the resource. Yeah. It reminds me a little bit about like playing action at home, charades.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of a flavor, but here you've got more of a one big adventure, right? One big game, and everyone has a role.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And to your point earlier, what you said about silliness of it, it is pretty disarming to players when they think they're coming for a therapy group, and then, you know, they walk into this room, they have a character sheet in front of them that they've helped build, saying they're like a dwarf, like cleric who, has a really big beard and is really jovial and excited. And then the GM starts doing like character voices and silly voices. And
yeah,
it's just very, disarming. And it is kind of covert therapy. So
definitely.
Riley, I think I'm wondering about, because you've been playing Dungeons & Dragons for 12 years, and then you said 7 years, and then now you are doing therapeutic gaming. Mm-hmm. I think I'm really wondering about, the question is what? This is new. Therapeutically, this is new. You were telling us earlier that there's only been like some recent research that has been published on it. So I think I'm wondering about what would you suggest to someone who has never done this before or has done this before recreationally and they're thinking of using it like therapeutically? What would you suggest, or rewind that. What would you want someone to know about therapeutic gaming, whether that's a potential new family or a potential kiddo who wants to come into your office and work on something? What would you want them to know about it?
That's brilliant. I think starting wide and then small, when I help train folks or, you know, talk to folks that are wanting to do this work, my encouragement or my suggestion is to make sure you're taking time to play the game. Not therapeutically, just play the game with your family, play the game with your friends, learning the rules and the cadence and the pacing well enough so you know when to break them. And so, you know, it is a storytelling game. And I tell folks that I help train, you may plan an encounter to go a certain way, and I guarantee you the group is going to find the one thing you did not think of for how to solve this problem. You may have created the circus, and they're going to have to help find the escaped lion, and they need to go find it in the woods. And then your players get there. They see the popcorn vendor. They see he's got a funny hat, and now they're invested in the popcorn vendor, and they don't care at all about your lion story. So it's also playing the game enough to know how to respond when things don't go to plan. How do you bring them back to the narrative? And that's just all gameplay. That's not even the therapeutic parts of it. Mm-hmm. So my encouragement is play it enough to know, play it enough to get comfortable, and also like for self-care for yourself, play it to have some fun. Make sure that you're enjoying it, right? It's not just another way to do therapy necessarily, but it's something that lives in you and you really enjoy. Cause then your groups are going to feel that. I think what I want people to know, or like families to know, or kiddos to know if they're coming in for this kind of group, but I'd really like them to know, oh man, I can get really sappy, but you know,
do it. Let's get sappy, Riley.
Well, to quote Up, adventure really is out there. And I think that there's so much of our experience in the world, and you know, it can be a really uncertain and scary place. And kiddos are not immune to that. Kiddos feel that. I think they feel it the most deeply, even, I think, more so than parents or adults. And so giving them a space to feel that the world is uncertain, but you do have a group of people who are invested in you, who care about you, and are here to go on this journey with you. And as uncertain as it can be, can we make it an adventure? You know, tabletop games meant the world to me growing up. They helped me so much. I have a product of as a kid who didn't feel like I had anything to say, and I didn't think anyone would listen. So my characters were bards who are very loud and gregarious and performed and danced and used the magic of their words to help their friends. And that lived in me.
Okay, right? I'm going to cry, Riley.
and that was, again, home game, not therapeutic, but it moved me. And so if kiddos can experience that in a way that we're not bound by the limits of this room, I'm so appreciative here that it's a cool room, but imagination and role play can take us anywhere and whatever the kiddos need. So long-winded answer to say, I hope that kiddos and families know or hear that this is a method of support and help that is really magical, and you can find it with trained therapists. But also, if you're a parent wanting to do this with your kiddo, there's plenty of like starter adventure kits online. There's character sheets that are already built. There's plenty of resources where you could just try this out and see if this is something for your family, for your kiddo. And if it's really helpful, you can find a therapeutic person to do this. But I also, it's just accessible. People can do it at home as long as there's lots of great environment and intention, and it can be therapeutic. It's like you can have your cake and eat it too. So, yeah.
Oh, Riley, I'm just thinking back to my childhood, and I think if I had known of something like this, I think it would have meant the world to me. I think it really would have been really important. And I'm just so happy that it's here and there are people out there who are getting trained in it and who are going the extra mile to make a cool room like you've done and just really lathering on the adventure and recognizing that safety is really important.
Yes.
And whether that's a group of people who are related to each other or a group of people who are not related to each other, that you hold the frame of the intention of we're here to explore and play and support one another. Mm-hmm. And for me, that just screams of attachment and that just screams mm-hmm. what's possible with community while you hold the intention of the safety.
Then I said it better.
Riley, thank you very, very much. It's been lovely hearing from you. Thanks for the amazing work you're doing out there and just continue to have so much fun. This was really awesome. Thank you so much.
Oh, yeah. So thankful for your time. And thanks for letting me nerd out. Hopefully have you here at some point. We can play a game.
That's it for today, folks. Thank you for listening. And we hope to see you again for our next journey.